Welcome to Community Forum, a weekly call-in program produced at the studios of KSKA. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. And now, the host of Community Forum, Nellie Moore.
Good afternoon. As they say at home, it's fall time. Fall time in Anchorage, and it's a great Wednesday afternoon. Thanks for joining us today for Community Forum. It is a live call-in show. If you're listening in the evening, you cannot call in because the program has been pre-recorded. I want to welcome very much to the show today, George Irvin, Vice President from AFN. How are you today?
I'm fine, Nellie.
I'm really excited to have you here because, as many people know, we're coming up on the AFN convention.
Yes, we are. It is 3 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, October 23, 24, and 25. And this year, it's going to be at the brand new, immense Dena'ina Convention Center downtown in Anchorage.
Have you had a chance to go into it?
Yeah. It's on the third floor in the ballroom. It's 100 yards long. The room is 100 yards long.
Wow.
It's really quite something.
I heard that the place where the arts and crafts will be sold is immense.
Yes. Down on the first floor, we will have 175 tables this year. In the old Egan Center, when we were there, we used to have no more than 100, 105 tables.
Yeah.
But now we've got much more room.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll also have 100 exhibitor tables.
In addition?
Private companies, government agencies, nonprofits, and mm-hmm. so on, who wish to get some information out to the public.
The ones that have been dying for years to be at AFN, but there was no room for them.
Yeah. So on that first floor, there'll be lots and lots of tables. All of the plenary sessions, that is the full sessions of the full convention, will take place on the third floor in that enormous ballroom.
Wow.
And we will be covering it, broadcasting it by television, gavel to gavel.
Mm-hmm. I just received information today that Sharon McConnell will be hosting some of that.
Yes, she will. Blueberry Productions, mm-hmm. which is her firm, has done the coverage, the gavel-to-gavel TV broadcast for several years now.
100 years, I think. At least 100 years.
We also web stream the whole thing
mm-hmm.
on the internet. So last year we had people calling in from Peru and Egypt and, you know, giving us email messages back.
That is so interesting. I mean, you and I were just talking briefly before the show that you've been around for many years, I think you said, with AFN since 84.
Yeah, I was first hired at AFN in 84, but I've been here in Alaska working in the Native community since 1968. I just passed my 40th anniversary of being here.
I was just trying to imagine how far back you would remember presidents of AFN. I mean, you've just been there.
I can remember Frank Ferguson and Willie Hensley and Emil Noddy and Byron Mallott and Sam mm-hmm. Keto and Morris Thompson.
All those bad boys with big ideas.
That's right.
Yeah. It's interesting because my husband and I were just talking about Frank Ferguson the other day and missing his knowledge and political.
Marvelous guy.
Yeah. What's special about this year's AFN?
Well,
it's a really tough year for rural Alaska.
Yes, it is. I don't know what we're looking at in this coming winter, Nellie. I think it's going to be rough in many villages of the bush
mm-hmm.
due to the cost of fossil fuels. Man, we're talking about space heat for houses and public buildings, and we're talking about electricity and transportation.
Yeah.
So there are going to be some locations in the state that will run out of fuel. They'll have some real emergencies, and we'll probably just have to deal with that as that arises, the state and federal governments as well as Native organizations.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of the reasons why the 2008 convention at the Dena'ina Convention Center is going to focus a good part of Friday the 24th, the middle day of the convention, on energy, with a specific emphasis on the bush. And in the morning, we will have several panels about what can be done in the short term, given the extraordinarily high prices of gasoline and fuel oil. In the village of Nikolsky on the chain, within the last few weeks, a gallon of gas was selling for $11.
Oh, wow.
And that's just through the roof. There are going to be a lot of difficulties this this winter. People also may find shortages of food because this summer they haven't been able to go to fish camp as often because they couldn't afford the gasoline for the outboard motor. So,
and maybe not even fall caribou hunting, too, probably.
Yes. We'll just have to see. You cannot do modern subsistence without energy and cash. You have to have an outboard motor, an ATV, a four-wheeler, three-wheeler, a snow machine, and so on.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how things go. I know you just quoted us some astronomical figure for gas, but even in Kotzebue, it's, I think, for 100 gallons, the new price is $465.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, 100 gallons, I mean, stove oil, sorry, stove oil. And stove oil, 100 gallons of it doesn't last very long in that windy, you know, barren climate. I mean, it's pretty much, if people have seen pictures of Kivalina, it's very similar to that, just spit that sticks out in the water and the wind blows all the time. So I think hopefully by then there will be some serious talk. Are there people at AFN, you say you're going to have this special time to talk about energy, who will be there from some of the oil-producing companies that may be able to offer some...
Yes, Alyeska Pipeline will be there, and I think Shell Oil is very interested in what's happening in the bush. They are holding a get-together at their offices the day before the convention opens up on the 22nd, Wednesday the 22nd. There will be a lot of people there who represent alternative energy companies, renewable, clean resources like wind or hydro or biomass or geothermal. There are a number of different options around the state. The state is jammed with alternative resources. So we'll talk about that on the afternoon of Friday. The morning is, what are we going to do in the short term now? What are we looking at in this coming winter and subsequent winters until such time as alternative resources really begin to take hold?
Recently, the people in the state got their $1,200 check from the state that was designed to be used to help defray the high cost of heating, fuel, and things like that. Do you think that's going to be a help, or is that going to need to happen more often? I mean, based on the fact that 100 gallons is almost $500, 100 gallons of stove oil.
Yeah, given the price of stove oil in some very cold and distant places, remote and hard to get to, Arctic Village is a classic example. In Arctic Village, you can go through four or five drums, 55-gallon drums a month. And that's going to run you about $2,000 per household per month.
Right.
And it's just an astronomical amount. Whether people will save their energy rebates to use it on energy itself or paying off other bills for the family remains to be seen. You can't control that. The legislature decided not to insist that it go to utilities or something else. It goes right to the individual household. But there's no guarantee as to what they will use it on.
As far as I know a lot of villages, when they built their HUD houses or whatever, they had installed wood stoves. But still, we're in a situation where not all communities have access to wood. Like, I mean, at least nearby Kotzebue, there are no trees. So you've got to go about 40 miles, I think, before you hit the tree line.
Yeah, wood is available in some places, but certainly not in others, where fuel oil really commands. And that's one of the reasons that weatherizing homes and public buildings like schools and clinics is absolutely essential. Remember, the state, Nellie, is swimming in billions of dollars of windfall profits just off the world price of oil recently.
Right.
They have the deep pocket rather than the feds this time. So all I'm suggesting here is that, you know, if you really want to engage in conservation and knock down your heating bills, tightening up your house just tight as a tick with an air exchanger and a good heating supply, even if it's run by diesel oil, is the key to conservation. As for electricity costs, people have already turned off just about everything they can turn off. They're doing their best to knock their electric bills down, but that's a big expense for the family as well. And there are health consequences from all of this. What about the baby who crawls on the floor where the air is cold?
Mm-hmm.
What about grandma who's in her 90s and is not well? There could be some real health consequences to lack of space heat.
I'm sure it's going to be like a really all-consuming topic this winter. I know I mean, even people here in Anchorage are concerned because the rates at NSTAR are going up, and yet and there are people who are having difficulty meeting those increases, and everybody else thinks they're, you know, from the bush, thinks that's really cheap. But it's not for Anchorage people. You know, they're, although, you know, they're not paying the high prices, we have elderly people even here in Anchorage who are going to have difficulty this winter as well.
Yeah.
So it just seems sort of mind-boggling. And all at the same time, our leadership is off campaigning. Of course, Governor Palin is campaigning.
Right.
Sean Parnell is campaigning. So I'm not sure who's hearing or who's managing all of this.
Well, as a matter of fact, some of those people who are campaigning, Senator Stevens may have to send us a DVD.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know, a pre-recorded DVD, and we'll simply play it for the crowd for his address. Well, I know that we're going to have Lisa Murkowski and Don Young in person there to give their addresses. We've invited the governor, and the governor's office is trying to work out whether or not we can get a DVD from her.
Mm-hmm.
So just because of this crazy political season,
yeah,
we're going to have to make some last-minute changes. And the agenda will change even after the opening gavel. Things have to be moved around because somebody goes on too long or somebody doesn't show up and so on.
Which is how pretty much every AFN is. If you've been to many of them, you know that. It's interesting to watch newcomers. They're like, oh, geez, they didn't get to that. What's going to happen now? I really wanted to hear that. And, well, it's probably going to be sometime tomorrow or,
right.
You know, it'll happen. As far as Julie Kitka, of course, is the president of AFN.
Right.
And every year there's a passage of or adoption of resolutions at the end of every AFN convention that sort of say, here's what we'd like AFN to be working on
right.
for this year. What have you been doing this past year that addresses the resolutions?
Well, there have been a whole lot of activities by AFN, but the predominant issue for the last 20 years has been subsistence, Nellie.
Mm-hmm.
It still remains in gridlock between the federal law, which gives a rural priority, and the state law that gives no priority to anybody and regards everyone, me included, as a subsistence user. That will go on until we get a new Congress and a new administration, depending on what they want to do. Then we may be able to address that question. But because of the world price of oil in the last year, let's say, energy has become the predominant issue. It's the scariest one,
mm-hmm.
having to do with the survival of villages, the very sustainability of villages. And you saw recently that Carol Como,
mm-hmm.
the superintendent of the Anchorage School District, and the mayor, Mark Begich, have been addressing the fact that we're going to have a lot of Native kids coming in and going to school,
mm-hmm.
elementary, middle school, high school, from the villages. All of a sudden, Carol reported that 500 Native kids showed up at the last possible minute,
mm-hmm.
just at the beginning of the school year, and they had only recently, within the previous weeks, left the village.
Right. I think probably as soon as those permanent funds hit, people were probably packed and ready to go. I think people are scared, I think.
Yes, they are.
People are very concerned about survival. And it's pretty unsettling, I think. And I guess there was sort of mixed reviews to the letter. Some people were concerned, you know, how it was presented as far as, you know, increasing Native population into Anchorage and
right.
Preserving the villages. But the last time Carol Como was on this show, we had talked about this briefly, and
right.
that had been, at the time, a concern of hers. And it's interesting to see that coming true. I think the Native corporations are going to be talking more and more about that as
right.
those young families move into the urban areas.
It's not only a question of what you can do in the bush with alternative resources or conservation of fossil fuels, but for those people who do have to move, how are you going to help them?
Mm-hmm.
What's it going to look like in Anchorage with lots and lots of people coming in? And remember, when they come in, they don't really want to come in, but they have to come in for economic reasons. You know, they'll probably move in with some family or relatives or friends here. Housing conditions could be pretty bad and mm-hmm. very crowded. And that brings along with it all of its own problems. So, you know, my own view is that if the state of Alaska, the state government, the legislature and the governor are really serious about having a healthy Alaska to hand to our kids and our grandkids, one of the things they could do is to look at the question of the sustainability of villages as self-supporting entities. Subsistence is key to that. Energy is key to that. Also, economic development and job creation at the village level for cash.
Mm-hmm.
Those are three big ones that are absolutely essential for Bush Alaska.
You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. It is a live call-in program if you're listening in the afternoon. My guest this afternoon is George Irvin, Vice President from the Alaska Federation of Natives. Give us a call if you'd like to join in, and he's going to be here for an hour, so we have access to his thoughts and vast experience working with groups from all over the state of Alaska. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433 or toll-free 1-888-353-5752. That's 1-888-353-5752. And if you'd like to email, it's communityforum@kska.org. And if you're listening in the evening, you cannot call in because the program has been pre-recorded.
Could I make one more
sure.
remark before we take any calls? And that is another feature that people are really going to like of this coming convention. And that is on Thursday, the 23rd, the first day, in the morning, we are going to honor and celebrate the military service of our Alaska Native veterans. I don't care if they were in the Guard, the Reserves, active duty, any service. It's a remarkable record. You mm-hmm. cannot name me any group of Americans that have a better per capita record of military service than Native Americans generally, and that includes Alaska Natives. So in the morning, we'll have a march-in of all the veterans who show up, and I just wanted to use this opportunity to invite all Native veterans who are coming to be there by 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
We will form them up by their services. We will have the Air Force Band with us on the floor of the convention, and as they march in, the band will play their service song, and the first group of veterans that we'd really like to get, and we're searching for them, is veterans of the ATG, the Alaska Territorial
oh, right.
Guard. They're very older folks now, but they have a marvelous story to tell. It's just a remarkable piece of history.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will march in behind an ATG flag, and the band will play, and then comes the Army, the Marine Corps, the Navy, the Air Force, and so on in order.
I actually have seen that early on when they did that, I think. But even then, it was still a little bit small.
Yeah.
But it was very moving, very
yes.
moving experience.
We did this 10 years ago at the 1998 convention. We put
yeah.
on a big deal.
Yeah.
It was longer and more elaborate than what we're going to do. But in the last 10 years, Nellie, we've had domestic terrorists, I mean inside the United States on 9/11. We have had a war in Afghanistan and a war in Iraq, and who carries the burden of that battle? Well, a lot of them are guardsmen,
mm-hmm.
guard personnel.
Mm-hmm.
And so, once again, we need to pat people on the back and just say thank you for your service to the country and to the state.
And it's interesting, too, because there are a lot of, in my neighborhood in particular, there are a lot of people in the Guard
yes.
Caucasian who have just come back from Iraq, but they're
yes.
always, you know, coming and going. And, you know, you always hear someone saying, well, so-and-so is going off to Iraq or, you know,
yes, right.
it's constantly military service people coming and going. As far as downtown parking, this is a whole new experience for us. We have a new parking garage going up. And how are people going to be accommodated with the new convention center?
Well, the convention center is located between 7th and 8th Avenues downtown. It's an enormous place. When you see it, Nellie, you just won't believe what it looks like inside. The big plenary room, the ballroom up on the third floor, is 100 yards long. You could play football in there.
Wow.
And it's really quite much more space than we have had in the past.
Does it have a view?
Yes, it has an absolutely stunning view of the Chugach Range.
Wow.
So it is open to the public at no charge. The only people who register and pay any delegate registration fee are the voting delegates from the regions and the villages. But anybody else, native or non-native, it's always open without any cost to anybody. And we're going to have we'll probably find out any glitches in the new system. We'll find if a wall plug was not wired correctly, we'll find it.
Mm-hmm. And I guess I really haven't heard, but having covered AFN for many years, I guess the accommodations for press must be pretty nice.
Right. We will have a press table there to accommodate TV and print journalism. You also asked about parking. There is the municipal parking lot, which is at the bus station, the transit center downtown.
Mm-hmm.
There is also the JCPenney's parking lot. And other than that, it's just on the street or wherever you can find a parking lot and pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But we are going to have a little trouble with parking because there's just not that much downtown to accommodate a huge thing like the AFN convention.
Mm-hmm. And, people are used to doing the Egan Center thing. That's going to be really strange not being in that building.
That's right. We've outgrown it years ago.
Oh, yeah.
We got very, very tight in there and couldn't do a lot of the things that we wanted to pull off. But now we've got a much larger place.
Mm-hmm. As far as your broadcast, you said Blueberry Production is working on that, and it's also a podcast. But is that going out? That's going out statewide, I assume.
Yes, it is, over the Rural Communications Network.
Mm-hmm.
Gavel to gavel, it's possible if you're in a village or you're right here in Anchorage, you can see the convention without going to the convention.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think you can, even in some cases, do that here in Anchorage.
Yeah.
You know, run home, and if you can't be there for a while, you can keep up on TV. It's really weird. Anyway, one of the things that Alaska Marketplace, that's been something new, trying to get some spark of economic activity out there in rural Alaska. There were some awards given out for business plans. Let's talk a little bit about that program and how it'll happen this year.
The Alaska Marketplace is a fascinating project that AFN's been running for about 3 years now. I think this is our third year. What it does is it's a competitive bid process in which small entrepreneurs who have a good idea for a business, and we're not talking big business, we're talking small business at the village or sub-regional level. If they have a good idea, they put in a prospectus, and then they get some technical assistance in writing up a business plan, which they also submit, and then a very experienced committee of economics professionals, bankers and economists and so on, who really know what's a good project and what's it look like and how would you recognize a project that simply won't go at all.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a judging of all of these final applications, and that will be done prior to the convention, but we will announce the winners at the convention. And what a winner gets is seed capital in various amounts, but we've given up to $30,000 in seed capital to start a business. They also get a certain amount of money to buy their own technical assistance. If one business needs tax help, you can get somebody to help you with your taxes. If another needs personnel or dealing with government regulations and so on, there is expertise around, and it helps to be able to call, pick up the phone and say, "Can you help me here? I can pay you."
Yeah.
For a little bit of training and technical assistance.
Yeah. So some of the things that I saw last year were food items, developing different kinds of skin products. I mean, it was a huge variety of ideas out there. Tourism was there. And so it was very interesting to look at the displays, and even of the ones that, you know, didn't make it through were, you know, very good ideas.
People love to see who wins these marketplace awards, because when it's somebody from their region, they go nuts. They are really proud and happy that someone had such a good idea for a business development. It won't solve the general problem of economic development in Bush, Alaska. But for the person who starts it and the people who work for him or her, yes, it does make a difference in terms of money and employment.
Yeah. Every job in every village really counts.
Yes, absolutely.
It's very critical.
Every job, every good career, every high school diploma, every college degree, they're just worth their weight in gold.
You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. If you'd like to call in, our number is 550-8433. My guest today is from the Alaska Federation of Natives. We're talking about the upcoming convention and other issues relating to AFN. If you want to call toll-free, it's 1-888-353-5752, or our email is communityforum@kska.org. We're going to go to the phones now, and Pamela on line 9, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. And I'm one of those who's been recently arrived in Anchorage as a displaced person from the rural areas, and having worked out there and still continue to try to support tundra roots and grassroots science. But I was wondering, how do I go about volunteering at the convention? Not only with ideas, but just, you know, sitting there and filing names or whatever else you need.
Well, that's very good of you, Pamela. The lady that you call is named Gladys Charles. She also is a vice president for financial management at AFN. She's handling all of the coordinating of volunteers for various kinds of tasks. And if she has anything that we need help on, she's the one to talk to.
Oh, that sounds good.
And you can just call her at AFN 274-3611. That's the switchboard, but ask for Gladys Charles and talk to her about volunteering.
That'll be great. And the aspects you were talking about in rural Alaska are so true, and it desperately needs a comprehensive approach. It's something that we've been watching for a couple of years, and I guess the rest of the states realized it's an emergency this year. But it certainly is. It's going to be a real change for all of Alaska,
the rural area. This move into Anchorage for you, you said, was economic?
Primarily, yes, and also mostly economic, yes.
And has it been somewhat of a culture shock, or you've lived here before, or other cities?
Not in Anchorage. I lived in Fairbanks, which I find a little more comfortable, but I've been in Bethel for 8 years, and in rural New Mexico before that, so it is still a shock.
Yeah.
I'm not used to all the water. You know, you can take a bath every night if you want to.
If you want to, that's the emphasis.
I used to live in Bethel, and I know what it's like to get the water offloaded.
I remember, Pamela, that's funny that this is starting up this whole chain of conversations, but when I moved from Kotzebue to Nome for a while, in Kotzebue, they hadn't had, like, water delivery forever.
Yeah.
You know, you just had to do whatever. But in Nome, there was a truck that came around and delivered it out of a big old hose. And it was like, wow, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, good luck, Pam. And I hope you can hook up with Gladys there at AFN.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you'd like to give us a call, our number is 550-8433. We're talking about the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention coming up here in Anchorage. 1-888-353-5752 is a toll-free. And don't forget, if you're listening at night, you can't call in because the program has been pre-recorded. George Irvin, I wanted to talk a little bit about the AFN convention for a time moved to Fairbanks.
Yes.
Because they were unhappy, the board was unhappy with the way the business community here in Anchorage had been receiving the AFN convention or not receiving it. And the relationship had gotten pretty strained. How is that relationship now? And where are we at?
Well, it wasn't the business community in Anchorage that was the problem. The business community here or the business community in Fairbanks loves the convention because it brings so many people and so much money, hotels, stores, taxi cabs, car rentals, restaurants, and so on. They love it. But there had been some difficulty in just dealing with certain situations here in Anchorage of discourtesy, of remarks that were totally out of order. People sometimes run into that on the streets of Anchorage. That was the principal reason that we went first to Fairbanks in 2005, and we held it in the Carlson Recreational Center. It's a hockey stadium or arena. Then we came back here in 2006, and we were in the Egan Center. Then last year, 2007, we went back up to Fairbanks to the Carlson Center. This year, we're back in the new Denina Center. And I can't predict for you what's going to happen next year. The board hasn't made its decision as to where it will be. But it'll be interesting to see if the new Denina Center persuades them to come back to Anchorage next year. I just don't know what to do. That's the board's call.
You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. It is a live call-in show if you're listening in the afternoon. Our number is 550-8433. We're talking about the Alaska Federation of Natives. We're going to go back to the phones now and make an online one. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. I have a quick question here but about the term Bush, Bush as a community. But before I do, I just want to make a very brief comment on something your guest said earlier, and that is about the new convention center. It's very tastefully done, and I really am proud of having a community, a facility like that in the community. And also want to thank the guests for complimenting the territory of gods. I think the new people in Alaska need to know the history of the contribution they made to this country, and especially being our forward guards during the Cold War and so forth. So I'm so glad you're honoring them at the convention. Now, to my question. Every time I hear the term Bush as a community, to me it has an extremely negative connotation, but my friends and others are telling me it doesn't. And maybe it doesn't. It just somehow rubs me wrong. I never use that term. I always say rural. And maybe it because of my Mississippi upbringing, being living in the rural. And when I was a kid, people used to describe us as living in the country. Yeah. And to me, the country didn't have the same connotation as rural. So maybe it's just semantics. And I would like to get my guest's take on my... Maybe it's a hang-up on that.
Well, I can understand your concern. It does sound kind of odd. It's a slang term that has grown up in Alaskan politics for years. But Native people who live in the bush, and non-natives as well, don't seem to object to that term. For example, down in Juneau in the House and Senate, there is the Bush Caucus, and they really do represent rural Alaska. Some of them are natives, some of them are non-natives, but they have a special caucus because they have common rural interests. Nobody seems to be offended by that use, and it's commonly used throughout the native community.
And and I do hear it used a lot, and also, like you say, I do hear native people use it themselves.
Yeah.
So I'm still working on getting over it. It's only taken me 42 years, but I'll make it.
Thanks for your call, Macon.
Thank you so much. And thanks for allowing me on the show.
Thank you much.
It's interesting because, you know, the whole conversation about the word Eskimo, of course, in Canada, it's a French word. The native people there don't like it. They want to be called Inuit. But here in Alaska, you know, you don't hear that very often. I mean, people haven't really set their foot down and said, "We're not calling us Eskimos anymore."
That's right.
So,
you run into those arguments from time to time here in Alaska. Inupiaqs and Yupiks and Chupik Eskimos, Siberian Yupiks, and so on, do not object to the term Eskimo.
Mm-hmm. I know I was talking to someone last night, an older woman and I were talking and just reminiscing about, you know, even as recent as my childhood, having grown up in Kotzebue, and of course there were many wars between the Athabascans and the Inupiaqs, and even when we were kids, you know, we were told that if someone came into town and they were obviously an Indian, that we were to be cautious and not, you know, and not talk to them or, you know. And so, of course, many of those feelings are now gone. I mean, there has been a lot of communication, no more big battles, but that actually was not that long ago that those feelings were present.
Right. You can remember recent incidents here in Anchorage that were really disrespectful toward Native people. The paintball of Fox Radio remarks by some DJs. Excuse me. That happens from time to time. And one of the things you ought to understand is that racism, as well as sexism, has been driven down only slightly below the surface of life. Mm-hmm. People don't say it and blurt it out as the way they used to because modern political correctness has taken over. But when their guard is down and they're talking among themselves, you'd be amazed that they have not really changed their minds at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there are people who will object to various kinds of words. The word native is quite an interesting term. It's just a general legal catch-all category for all the different kinds of indigenous peoples that the Americans found here.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's a native of some place. It just means you were born there.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of people, that whole business of saying Native Americans or Alaska Natives or Native Alaskans, you know, people just get it all balled up. And
right.
Anyway, so AFN, you said you're not sure about how it's going to go this year, but things are looking pretty good as far as having the convention here. Planning and everything has been going well.
Yes, it has. And we're just about to come out with a final draft agenda. It will change even after we publish it in the convention guide, but that's just part of the landscape that we work on.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be made public next week, and it will be posted on our website for AFN, and I'll give you the address for that website. It is www.nativefederation. That's all one word, jammed together. .org.
What about police protection? I know that's always been an issue for AFN, and frequently, you know, our community doesn't have a good statistic as far as violence against women. It's a problem for us here in Anchorage. So is it a problem during AFN, and what safeguards are put in play when the AFN convention is held here?
Well, we try to do as much as we can, and the city government tries to do as much as it can, the mayor's office and so on, the police department. There was a lot of cooperation from the Fairbanks mayor's office and police department last year. They were absolutely determined that nobody would be hurt on the streets of Fairbanks last year, and that's a good attitude for the city government and the police force and other responsible entities to take. We cannot control everything. We cannot control everybody's behavior. But occasionally something very unacceptable will happen. And when it happens to a Native woman, it's particularly offensive to the Native community because Native women are vulnerable in the city. That's just the plain fact of it.
Mm-hmm. Kuyana, it's normally held at the Egan Center?
Yes, we used to hold it at the Egan.
And this year it'll be in the new center?
Right, it'll be up on the third floor in that same big ballroom.
So you'll probably have a lot more seating available.
Oh, yes, we can put 3,000 people up there.
Wow.
And we never could do that at the Egan. Yeah. We could put maybe 1,800 in the Egan. There will be the same kind of format, about 6 dance groups per night. There will be 2 nights only. We've done it 3 nights in past conventions, but this year, because of limitations of funding, mm-hmm. we're going to go on Thursday night, the 23rd, and Friday night, the 24th, starting at 7 o'clock. And the tickets to get in, we need to charge for it in order to pay for the convention, are only $10 a piece,
that's
regardless
really cheap.
Of age. So y'all come. I mean, people just love it.
You know, I of all the years I've covered AFN, I've never really had a chance to watch it because nighttime is when press are usually working on their stuff. But we would see the people, you know, trying to get in and just people who are turned away because there just is no more room. So hopefully this will be a great treat for Anchorage and more seating. And
it, too, will be covered by television and broadcast to the bush throughout the state.
What about you had sort of touched on financial issues. I know AFN, or I believe AFN, has been having a few financial difficulties, but the convention itself is kind of a cooperative effort among some groups, isn't it, nowadays?
We have succeeded in raising we have succeeded in raising well over $500,000 just for the convention. That's from all kinds of sponsoring companies and organizations who give charitable donations, and from within the Native community as well. So we've raised over $500,000, and we'll be all right on the convention, but what happens to AFN and its year-round operations after that, I can't predict for you. We'll just have to see how much money there is.
I know it seems like, particularly at this time, people, you know, usually look to AFN for leadership and guidance. And I know there has been some concern if AFN is, you know, having financial difficulties, who will be the voice for, in particular, rural Alaskans?
That's
because for years, AFN was the group that carried the subsistence fight and everything.
Yeah. It carried the land claims fight back in the late 60s.
Got it started.
It's an organization with a history that is simply unbelievable. By the way, you know Willie Hensley from Kotzebue. Mm-hmm. Willie will be at the convention. He is a new author. His book is coming out, I think, after the first of the year. It's going to be marvelous. I've already read it.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. It's called 50 Miles from Nowhere, and he will be there at the convention. We're going to set aside an artist's room or an author's room. He won't have any advance copies to sign for people, but he can read to you, and it's one of the most moving books you'll ever read.
Wow.
About his own personal life, and he attaches his own experiences to these great things that happened in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
There's never been anything like ANCSA in the history of Indian affairs in this country.
Right.
It's unbelievable, 44 million acres of land.
And the D2 lands and all of the federal lands that followed in that whole process of identifying them. And, of course, the Native groups were all worried about ancestral lands, burial grounds.
Yes.
Just a very complex act. You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. Today we're talking about the Alaska Federation of Natives. My guest is George Irvin. If you'd like to join in the conversation, if you have questions or something you'd like to share, our number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433, or toll free 1-888-353-5752. You know, it's funny, bringing up the toll-free, because lately I've been getting calls from other parts of the state saying they wanted to be on Community Forum. I'm like, well, you're not even in our listening area.
Yeah, right.
You know, but they're like, it's on the web. People don't care.
That's right.
So we're going to go to the phones now, and line two, Amadou?
Yes.
Did I say that correctly?
Yes, you said that correctly. And I have a concern. Alaska, first of all, I have to thank them for encouraging many ethnic groups to come to this country, to this state. And there are many African Americans, and mostly live in a Mountain View area. Is there any community integration program with the Native Federation program, whereby some of us can come and listen? I am a native of Africa, and I'm here.
Yes.
Is there any program that some of us can come and participate?
Well, certainly you're welcome at the convention. I'd love to see you, to have you see the kind of gathering. It's, you'll never find a larger Native American gathering throughout the United States, and it's the largest thing that happens in Anchorage. As for other kinds of programs for newly arrived immigrant peoples and other ethnic groups, I'd have to defer to the city government on that.
I think the museum might be a place of interest. It's got some exhibits, and it's also got some audio materials and video that might be interesting to you, Amadou. I know there are on the internet, if you look up Alaska Native, sometimes you'll find there are materials at the LUSAC Library or some of the local libraries that have some video materials. And then there are usually school events that occur throughout the year if you have children, where events, you know, kids put on a little skit or something talking about their culture. So there are a lot of them going on. It's just hard to sort of put my finger on any particular one outside of AFN, which is really big. So,
as a matter of fact, don't forget the Native Heritage Center as well on the highway.
Yes.
That's a remarkable place, and during the summertime, it caters to a tourist trade. But in the wintertime, when the tourists are gone, it's used for kids from schools all around the Anchorage area and for local residents here. And I would encourage Mr. Amadou to take a look at that and call them up and find out what their operating hours are during the wintertime. Just go out and take a look at what they've got.
Okay, back to the phones, and we'll give George a chance to enjoy some water if he'd like to. Anyway, Carolyn on line 6, welcome to the show. How are you today, Carolyn?
Hi, this is Caroline. Thank you. I'm fine. I'm fine and I'm sad. I'm going to be out of state and will miss AFN, which I always go to if I'm anywhere near. In fact, I think it was it must have been 67 that I attended in Fairbanks. Otherwise, that would have been WEIO, but I can't remember which. I remember it was AFN because I saved up the Tundra Times banquet ticket with $15, and that was a fortune for me then. I wanted to ask. First of all, I'm going to email Mr. Irvin, if he has an email address there with AFN, and I'm assuming he does, about some things that I have seen over the years and brought forward, such as my, back in 94, sent some materials to one of our senators about pellet stoves because of the opportunity to make pellets down in the Homer area. And now I understand they're doing them up in Fairbanks because one of the problems then was the leaking storage tanks in the village.
Yes.
And one thing about it, if you have a tanker full of pellets go down, you don't have problems with they dissolve. You don't have oil in the water.
Right.
But anyway, there are a lot of things like that. And I got to travel extensively throughout Alaska and down in the Yupik region also. And I want to encourage everyone, because you might think you know Alaska, but go take a look at the Yupik exhibit. It's up only through the 26th of this month. It's been here since February, but it is just amazing. It's at the museum, and there is a fee associated with it, but give yourself at least 2 to 3 hours to go through it. And then my final question to you is, are you going to be having any success stories, such as the Kotzebue Wind Farm?
Yes.
Because they can generate electricity with that wind and heat homes with it.
One of the features we're going to have on Friday morning at about 9 o'clock is a panel of Native leaders from different regions around the state talking about what Native organizations and local governments, boroughs and cities, are doing to address the immediate question of fossil fuel costs in the bush. We're not just going to cry about the current conditions and how arduous they are. They are bad. But the point is to show the Native community and the rest of the state what can be done. There is a real role for Native organizations and Native leaders and Native communities. This cannot be fixed by the state government and the federal government.
Yeah, and I would like to add that there's a role for everybody, because all anyone has to do to look to see what damage can be done to an entire nation is to look at Brazil, when they had such a huge kill off of opportunity for people to stay in their villages throughout Brazil, and they were forced to move into the cities. And the damage that that did, not only to the displaced people, but to the communities themselves that could not cope with folks that did not have an understanding of how to live in a city and all of the other impacts. I'm having trouble living in this city. I can just imagine what it would be like if I grew up in Chivac or wherever. Chivacers are very smart people. But the point is, it's all our problem.
Thanks for your call, Caroline, and I'm sure you'll be able to contact George on the AFN website. There are many ways to contact people.
Yeah, just let me give her my email address. It's G Irvin, G-I-R-V-I-N, all one word, at Native Federation, all one word, .org. And I'd like to see that stuff if you can send it to me.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your call. If my guest today, as you just heard, is George Irvin from the Alaska Federation of Natives. Our local number, if you'd like to join the call-in, is 550-8433, or the toll-free is 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is communityforum@kska.org. One of the things that is tough to talk about is Senator Ted Stevens.
Yes.
And what is happening with him right now as far as his trial for not reporting gifts from Vico, allegedly, that he received.
And right.
He has played a huge role in helping in developing programs throughout rural Alaska.
Yes.
And many of those came in the form of earmarks. Is he going to be at the convention this year, or do you know what's up with that?
We do not know. I have talked several times to his office in Washington, D.C., but the problem is they don't know what the schedule of this trial is going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
I would predict that if he cannot come in person, he's most likely going to send us a pre-recorded DVD message.
Mm-hmm.
The same is true of the governor's address to the convention. We may get that by DVD, even though the person cannot come.
Mm-hmm. Which has happened in the past. I know when
right.
there were times when the Senate was still in session and he and Don Young had to be down there when they appeared
yes.
in other ways.
Right.
What about the people who may want to participate in or who may want to get a table at the crafting? How do they find out about that, or are those all taken already?
They're already taken. We've sold 175 tables at $300 per table.
Wow.
Again, we have to raise money to support this convention. That's about the most we can put in there.
Mm-hmm.
There is a waiting list already on convention arts and crafts tables, as well as on the other exhibitors' tables.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people have called in, and we've got a waiting list here. And when Julie gets back, she'll make, just before the convention starts, she'll make the decisions about which ones on the waiting list can be accommodated and which we have no room for.
Julie Kitka, of course, is the president of AFN. What has been her focus in the last 60 days or so as far as issues?
Energy. Subsistence, 8A contracting,
yes.
The Small Business Administration,
yes.
for native firms, mm-hmm. Minority firms. That's a hot issue, too.
Which sort of came up in the paper in the last few days.
Yes.
8As are recognized by the federal government. They are...
They're non-competitive. They're non-competitive awarding of...
Contracts,
federal contracts for various kinds of
like
services.
Security at Fort Carson, Colorado is
yes.
Aleutic, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So that is turned into a big moneymaker for some of the corporations
yes.
that in the past have not done so well financially.
Right. It is a good thing for natives and native shareholders. But some people object to it because it does produce a lot of money for a very small number of corporations. But
mm-hmm.
I still say that one of the things you have to do, especially for village corporations that don't have much land and don't have much money, if they're really going to do business in the wider world, they're going to have some opportunities for minority contracting.
Mm-hmm. I know that my village corporation, it's been – I can't remember the last time I got any – kind of a dividend. And when I did get one, I think it was like $70 or something like that. So the village, and it's one of the larger communities, so the village corps are, you know, the ones that don't have any resources like lead, zinc, or whatever. They don't have the subsurface. It's pretty tough on them. So it was interesting to pull up at the gate at Fort Carson and see a guy with an Aleutic hat on. I was like, what the heck? That was pretty crazy looking. What are you going to be focusing on in the next couple of months outside of the convention? I know this is all consuming, but energy, I know we've talked about.
Yes, energy will predominate. It'll continue to predominate, and we will see what happens this winter.
Are the finances of AFN a concern for the continued existence of AFN?
No. There'll always be an AFN. The Native community will support that, but how much it can afford in the way of staff remains to, and programs remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. I know that the other organizations have formed up. There is the ANCSA Presidents Group. Has that been a in competition with AFN at all? Or
no, as a matter of fact, it does represent the CEOs of the regional for-profits.
Mm-hmm.
There is also the Human Resources Committee of AFN, which is the 12 nonprofit social service providers, mm-hmm. the regions. They have their various organizations that work on their specific issues. But in the last analysis, they all come back to Mama AFN.
Yeah, it's always always there. I know some people in Anchorage may be familiar with those health-related organizations through Alaska Native Medical Center. There is Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium,
yes.
South Central Foundation, some of the Siri nonprofits, and a lot of the
housing authorities as well, Native mm-hmm. housing authorities as well as municipal and public housing authorities all over the state.
Which do a lot of work even here in Anchorage. I noticed Cook Inlet Housing has a little van they drive around, and there's a little group that drives elders around. It's interesting. And even, I think, Chickaloon, some of those communities whose members can't afford to drive into the hospital, the communities, the tribes help out by helping to provide transportation.
Could I add one more thing?
Sure.
This is a feature that I think people will be interested in, and that is, in addition to the veterans and in addition to energy, at the opening of this convention on Thursday morning, the 23rd, we're going to honor the Dena'ina Athabascan people. The new convention center is called the Dena'ina mm-hmm. Civic and Convention Center, and that's a good thing for Anchorage to have done. The Dena'ina people are the traditional pre-contact Aboriginal mm-hmm. population of both sides of Cook Inlet, reaching up into the valley, into the Mat Valley, and down on the Kenai Peninsula. And we're going to start out with a Dena'ina dance group from the Kenaitse tribe in Kenai.
Wonderful.
At 8 o'clock in the morning, they're the welcoming group. Yes, it's early. And then at 8:30, we have our call to order.
Okay. I'm sorry, we're out of time, but thank you very much, George Irvin from AFN. I'm your host, Nellie Moore, reminding you to tune in next week. It'll be Bill McAllister from Governor Palin's office talking about who's running the ship. So we'll see you then. And again, George, thank you very much for a great time.
Community Forum is a production of KSKA's News and Public Affairs Department. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write to us. KSKA 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska 99508. Or email us at communityforum@ksKA.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at ksKA.org/communityforum. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.